This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. So the time has come to bid farewell to a turbulent August.
And I know we've said this time and time again, but I'll say it again. There was a turning point in the last couple of weeks for Donald Trump about his support for the American people. He did cross that red line when it came to race.
The breaking point for most came when Trump said blame for the violence fell on both sides.
I think yesterday's very angry press conference by the President of the United States here at Trump Tower was the breaking point for many of these CEOs.
This honestly to me feels like where you've seen the biggest breaking point between members of Congress and the Trump administration.
But don't unbuckle that seatbelt. There's more rough road ahead.
Before leaving the payroll, Steve Bannon, quote, repeatedly warned Mr. Trump and John F. Kelly, the White House chief of staff, that September could be the breaking point for the Trump presidency, a total meat grinder.
The former White House chief strategist foretold a month crammed with tight deadlines for tough legislative priorities, like the debt ceiling, the budget, rewriting the tax code. Even as Trump, the punk president, gleefully and repeatedly hurls himself from the podium into a mosh pit roiling with traditional conservatives, freedom partiers, and his own politically ambiguous base. Noah Rothman, a traditional conservative at the durably neoconservative commentary magazine, told us a few months back that time was running out for the president to enact key parts of the conservative agenda. We checked back with him this week, and he doesn't hold out much hope for a tax code rewrite in September either.
I'm not alone in thinking that this thing's just not going to happen. I don't really think that there's enough time in the calendar before we get into a really dense political season with a lot of pitfalls and landmines. Republicans and Democrats alike are going to be posturing and not interested in pursuing votes that could backfire on them.
Back when you were on the show in May, you said this.
No one is happy right now who's honest on the right. People who are, say, on my side are very frustrated. The alt-right is miserable. They are beside themselves.
Has anything changed then?
Things have changed, actually. The defenestration of virtually everyone who represents the nationalist populist wing of the party, with the exception of former Jeff Sessions staffer Stephen Miller, is a welcome development for the traditional conservative wing of the party, the wing of the party that was skeptical of Donald Trump to begin with.
We're talking Sebastian Gorka and Steve Bannon being shown the door.
Right.
This, you think, is a positive sign for people. Others on the left suggest that the president doesn't need those guys because he embodies those things.
Yeah, I don't think that's unfair criticism, because the removal of Steve Bannon from his position as chief strategist for this White House hasn't affected any real policy changes or personality changes on the part of the president. It's always going to be his administration. But it also suggests we were purging all of the old Bolsheviks.
Bolsheviks, you mean extremists.
The really prominent figures. And this was a group of individuals that had come to terms with Donald Trump early. The Republican Party was not really on board with Donald Trump until he became the nominee. So anybody who was on board before he became the nominee was the B team.
What's changed then? There's no indication that there's going to be a change in policy or behavior in the White House because of these departures.
Well, there is. I'll give you an anecdote.
Okay.
Axios reported the other day, very well sourced, that the president had something of a tantrum when he was assessing the landscape of his policies on trade.
He said he wanted tariffs.
I want tariffs. Give me them. Where are my tariffs? The president isn't getting what he wants because the Republican Party doesn't want that. The president issues a tweet in the middle of the morning, a scandal-plagued morning, in which he says, you know what, we're going to stop the transgender enrollments in the military. There was no DOD memo. There was nothing to back that up. A month later, he issues a guideline, and his Secretary of Defense says, no, we're going to keep doing the review that we've been doing for the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
This president is a weak president. He doesn't have control of his own party. He barely has control of his own administration. And the people who do have control of the administration are of a more responsible sort.
You're saying people should be happier now.
Well, I'm happier now.
But your agenda isn't going to be enacted.
Well, I resigned myself to that some time ago.
You did?
Yes.
You wrote recently that the pardoning of former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio has the potential to reverberate in ways few Republicans are able to envision. Why do you think that decision is bigger than the Republicans realize?
Well, because I was among many Republicans, many conservatives on the right, who spent the majority of the Obama administration castigating the liberal commentariat for seeing racism in shadows. Institutional racism was pervasive. Racists spoke to one another in code, code that only they could decipher, and yet the only people who were deciphering it were the people criticizing it. It was a hard case for the left to make, and it was one I thought was overblown. Now, with the president wrapping his arms around somebody who legitimately presided over what courts and Republican appointee judges say represents institutional racial discrimination among law enforcement, Republicans are now compelled to own that. They've spent the last 30 years walking away from this, and now they have to defend it.
You charged that it was long the Democrats' view that the rule of law is invalid if it doesn't reflect the policy goals they want. Now you're saying Republicans have also embraced this very idea.
Yeah, this was the conservative objection to Donald Trump during the primaries, that his relatively poor understanding of conservatism, of the system in general, the Constitution, the rule of law, would tarnish the brand, an already poorly understood brand. And the demands of tribalism are forcing Republicans who know better to be muted in their criticisms of those divergences from orthodoxy.
And you fear it might tar the Republican Party for a long time. And yet the Republican leaders didn't flinch that much when the pardon came down. Paul Ryan did put out a statement that he doesn't agree. Trump antagonist Jeff Flake said that he would have preferred the president honor the judicial process. Seems a little weak tea to me.
Well, it is no small thing for the Speaker of the House, for members of the Senate, for members of his own administration to be sort of tepid about the nature of this decision. And it is a terrible decision. But the nature of their antipathy towards this president is itself extraordinary. And I frankly don't think Republicans get nearly enough credit for the amount of effort they put into boxing in the head of their own party, who's only 7 months into his administration.
Well, that leads inevitably to this question then. You said that the Republican leadership would stay behind Trump, or at least bear with him, as long as they could see him as expedient in getting their legislative priorities through, like rewriting the tax code. But he hasn't. And September doesn't look promising. And then, of course, there is a drumbeat of stories about presidential self-dealing and contacts with Russia, wearing hats that he's selling on his website to Texas ravaged by Harvey, and all these other things. This is an unprecedented presidency, wouldn't you say?
Surely.
Do you think that it's going to take a bad midterm election for the Republicans to finally open themselves up to impeachment possibilities?
Oh, yeah. And I don't even know if that'll do it. You have to reach the point of diminishing returns. I don't believe we're anywhere near that point for conservatives.
That's the question. What is that point?
When they realize that the agenda will not be fulfilled and hope springs eternal. So we are considering now that there is always an opportunity, as long as the majorities are in place, to secure some sort of a conservative victory out of the 2016 election. Until that point comes, there will be no abandoning Donald Trump, no matter how much he offends norms and typical behavior expected of a president.
The mainstream media keep calling every event a turning point. I'm wondering whether or not they're consulting Republicans enough to know what that turning point might be.
I honestly don't know, and perhaps the press should stop calling things a turning point when they're continually discovering that they aren't, to make predictions would be a fool's errand. I won't do it. But I will say that we've seen quite a bit of erosion among the president's support among Republicans. And I'm not just talking about members of the Congress who are, by the way, conducting four committee-level investigations into the president's campaign, which he's very frustrated by. And we had Donald Trump's own pollster, Tony Fabrizio, send out a tweet in which he ostensibly was trying to prove that the president's support is solid and Republicans have no interest in a primary challenge in 2020. Those set of tweets demonstrated two things. One, that the president's base was softer than even a lot of public policy polling had demonstrated. And two, that among a set of five challengers, mostly drawn from the Senate and including Governor Kasich among those five and the president, Donald Trump drew only 50% support among the universe of Republican primary voters. That's remarkable for month 7 of a president's administration, and it demonstrated the precise opposite of what Tony Fabrizio set out to prove.
What did you think of the Wall Street Journal editorial board's recent call for Republicans to think of Trump as a political independent, to basically to ignore him and his tweets in order to move forward on priorities like the budget and rewriting the tax code?
Lovely daydream to think you can ignore the president of the United States. You cannot. But at the same time, Donald Trump, his instincts politically are not conservative. They're barely even Republican. They move with the wind. And if the wind moves in the direction of, for example, single-payer health care, that's the direction in which the president will move. And he will work with Democrats to achieve that victory because all he cares about are victories, not policy agendas. That's what the Wall Street Journal was warning of, that he has no principle. And as a result, he will pursue whatever policy objective is right immediately before him. And that could be a liberal victory.
So then what will be the breaking point when the Republicans decide to walk away?
Well, the point of diminishing returns occurs when the agenda is no longer achievable. And that would mean losing control of the House because the Senate's probably out of reach in 2018. That would be the earliest point at which we reach diminishing returns.
So who are you for in 2020?
I see so much 2020 navel-gazing.
Noah, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Noah Rothman is Associate Editor of Commentary Magazine. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Micah Lowinger, and Leah Fetter. We had more help from John Hanrahan, and our show was edited by me. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Sam Baer. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter's WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. Thanks also to Andy Lancet from the WNYC Archives. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. Bob Garfield will be back next week. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.